Hello, this is Kendra Brodeen, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com. And today I am so excited to bring you a conversation with Julie Hoddle Day. Julie is a longtime Virginia practitioner with the law firm of Hewlin, Sharp, Autry & Day, and she represents parties in family law litigation and small business transactions and litigation. Julie brings a business sensibility to her divorce practice that benefits her clients in the short term and in the long term. She prides herself in her reputation as an honest, hard-working attorney who keeps her clients well-informed and believes that a client who is well-informed is a client who is well-served. An active member of the Virginia State Bar since 1991, Julie is also admitted to the Maryland State Bar and to practice before the United States Supreme Court. She has conducted litigation in the Virginia counties of Fairfax, Arlington, Prince William, Loudoun, Fauquier, Culpeper, and Orange. Noted for her diplomacy and skill in drafting prenuptial agreements by the Washingtonian Magazine in 2005, she was named by that publication as one of the top 88 divorce lawyers in the Washington, D.C. area in 2009. Julie is a member of the family law subsections of the Virginia State Bar and the Virginia Trial Lawyers Association. She's also a member of the National Association of Women Lawyers and is an associate member of the Fauquier Bar Association. A frequent public speaker, Julie addresses business and divorce issues as well as work-life balance for attorneys. She has appeared on CoParenting101.org as a guest interviewee commenting on divorce, custody, and co-parenting issues. Her upcoming article, Divorce and the Closely Held Business, advocates that all businesses include in their regular business planning the creation of a contingency plan in the event of a principal or employee divorce. It will appear in the fall 2010 issue of Family Law News, a publication of the Family Law section of the Virginia State Bar. Julie is a 1991 graduate of the Washington and Lee University School of Law, where she was a member of the Phi Delta Phi legal fraternity. She is a 1988 cum laude graduate of the Lycoming College in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. A native Virginia, Julie now resides in the Washington, D.C. area with her husband and their two children. So, Julie, with that, welcome to the call today.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
It's great to have you here. Well, Julie, as we get started, I'd like to invite you to look back on your past, on your educational and your career past, as well as your life. And I'm wondering if you always feel like you were good at balancing work and life, or if it feels like there was a critical time or critical point where you needed to do something different in order to achieve that balance.
You know, I thought as a young lawyer that I was balancing well, and everything kind of held together for 6 or 7 years while I was practicing until my husband and I had our first child. And at that point, I realized what I had been doing was just working extra hours to make sure everything got done and then coming home and staying late to get everything done, you know, staying up late to get everything done there. But I wasn't actually balancing. I was just running myself into the ground. And you know, with the birth of a child, that really forced me to face the reality of what I was doing. And at that point, I realized I was not managing everything and I wasn't keeping balance. And that was really a turning point for me. And I sought help to gain balance at that point.
What kind of help did you seek, Julie?
I secured the services of a professional coach who specializes in dealing with women lawyers and anything to do with women lawyers and their practice and managing themselves, but particularly work-life balance issues for women lawyers. And as a new mom, that's the one point I can look back to and say, yeah, that's where I started turning the corner and gaining a grip on my schedule and my life between work and home.
Mm-hmm. With that, Julie, I'm wondering what during that time felt like your biggest challenge or your biggest struggle in trying to achieve that balance between your work and your life?
I didn't have a name for it at the time. Now, looking back, I realize it was time management, which is a buzzword now, but this was 1998, and you didn't hear people talking about time management or work-life balance in common terms at that point. But the biggest challenge was I couldn't get it all done in the day. My work demands were such that I, you know, with a young child, I couldn't stay until 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock at night anymore. I needed to go home and take care of the baby. So the work demands couldn't be met within a traditional day time, and I couldn't stay late to correct that. And then I would get home and have things that needed to be done, but my mind was still on work. So I just, I couldn't, there wasn't even any way for me to juggle all the balls I had in the air. I knew they were there, and they were falling everywhere. So, you know, that the inability to manage time for me was the biggest issue. I knew how to prioritize. That was not an issue for me, but managing it all and getting it all done was a major issue.
I'm sure that you are not alone, if only we could create those extra hours in the day and figure out how to get things done. But I'm hoping that, and maybe it is your answer to the next question in terms of your biggest lesson, but I'd love to hear what you discovered or how you came to be able to manage that time better and get things done. So before we get to that, I'm wondering, is that part of what you would say your biggest lesson has been in trying to create work-life balance? Is something to do with that, or would you say it's something different?
No, actually, you hit the nail on the head. It's absolutely the problem of time management was also the solution.
Mm-hmm.
It took a process of years, actually, for me to gain all the tools that I use now to maintain things. But time management actually was learning how to do it better. Was the key to solving the problem for me. That and being honest with myself and knowing that, you know, there are going to be days when you can manage and there are going to be days when you can't, and you can't think the cause is lost when you don't. So, I mean, I think your question really hit the nail on the head.
Well, what would you say then, Julie, were some of those, on the days that you felt like you were managing, maybe, what was going right? go ahead, please.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, what were the things that you were doing that made it feel like it was going right and that you were achieving as close to balance as you could possibly achieve?
Well, you know, I always use, when I talk about this to anybody, and I love finding other women lawyers at cocktail parties or at functions, you know, for the bar or whatever, and talking about this issue because I think it's really important. I think it's important for everybody. But I always use the analogy of juggling. You know, you've got these balls in the air, and you can keep them all going. And when you're not juggling properly, the balls start falling, and you know it. You know, internally, you know it. You know you're missing deadlines, or you know you missed your kids' play at school. And so you have to make these minor adjustments and get the balls back up in the air going. It doesn't mean you're not exhausted, but it means you're getting everything done and you're doing it efficiently. And in order to bring everything under control so that you can keep the balls going in the air, I found that the tools I used, it came in three different areas. The first, and this is the earliest tool that I used, was not highly technical. It's just really honest self-assessment. What were my personal goals? What were my professional goals? And having to really sit down and think about that, and whether there was anything in either my personal or my professional life that would be hard to keep from overwhelming the other side of it. And in my case, I was doing a combination. I was in a general practice law firm, and I was doing a combination of business litigation and family law and business transactions. And what I was learning was that the business transaction end of the work was highly unpredictable, and the transactions could happen at any time. They were not taking place on a particular schedule, and when somebody needed it done, they needed it done right then and there. So there was a lack of predictability, and there was a lack of scheduling control. So what I had to do was make that decision that I would cut that part of my practice back and focus instead on the litigation end of the business work and the family law, both of which have a controlled schedule more or less because you're working with court dockets and you have to do everything in advance. So, you know, that's part of your self-assessment that I think anybody should be doing. And, you know, on the personal end, you can have things that are overwhelming your ability to do things at work. For example, if you have a child who has special needs, is that going to be a problem? And, in fact, we ended up having some issues with one of our children that I had to make adjustments along the way. But having made that personal assessment, then can you create a plan to address the overwhelming issues? Can you and, you know, your spouse or your partner work a schedule that, you know, helps one of you act as backup for the other, things like that. So that was the first tool, was the honest self-assessment and going through that whole process I just described to you of, you know, basically balancing one side of your life versus the other and making any adjustments that you need to. The second part was time management training. And, you know, you'll hear every time I talk about this, time management comes up over and over and over again. And, you know, I always thought of myself as being a particularly organized person. I knew how to prioritize. But prioritization is not the same as time management. And that was a really surprising lesson for me to learn. And so what I did was I actually went out and took time management courses to help me sift through everything that I had to deal with on a daily basis. And one of the things, other than the fact of the shock of learning that my prioritization was not actually time management and that I needed a different skill set, the other thing was, in one of the early courses I took, they said, you know, when you're talking about time management, you sit down at your desk and you prioritize and you get everything going for the day for your work, but you also must include your personal stuff. And that was a big step for me in gaining a grip on my schedule, because I'd gotten very efficient at work, but I hadn't taken into account anything that was going on at home in my general planning. Once I did that, that established another level of control of my balance issues. And then the last piece of that is technology. No matter what I did with my self-assessment and my time management, none of it would be possible to manage without the technologies that have come along in the last 8 to 10 years. You know, I live and die by a BlackBerry. My office is fully paperless. We have full remote access to all of our systems so that I can work from anywhere. In fact, recently I had a case where my opposing counsel was laughing at me every time we talked, because we were negotiating something through the course of a day, and I went from the office to taking my son to a testing program downtown in D.C., and then the last time he talked to me, I was sitting at a pool for my sister's swim team practice, you know, and I had the laptop going, and we negotiated and settled the case the whole day with me, you know, all over town. So technology is really important, and if you're not technologically savvy, it's a good place to start, because you can really help yourself in that area with access, people having access to you and being able to control things, even though you're not sitting at your desk. So that's a very long-winded answer.
No, it's fantastic.
You know, it's kind of a three-point set of tools. It's broad in scope.
Well, and they build upon one another, very complementary to one another. As you said, even if you've done the assessment of both your professional and your personal, and you've thought about your time management, if you're not integrating some of the tools that you have technologically that you can utilize, you might not achieve as much. And sort of there's probably that sweet spot in the middle of all three where things come together, and you've done maybe the assessment that, had you not done the assessment, the other tools wouldn't matter. You wouldn't know your priorities. You wouldn't be able to use your technology. You wouldn't be able to figure out that time management. So I think it's a great answer, a very thorough answer, and like you said, a three-pronged answer that, taken together, is very effective.
Well, thanks. And, you know, the only other point I should make to add on to that is that none of this is static. Any of those things, you know, you go through the assessment or the time management or the technological training, all of those require maintenance on an ongoing basis. And sometimes you have to look at it on a weekly or a daily basis if things get really horribly out of skew, or your child gets sick, or, you know, one of your cases blows up. It's a constant work in progress. You don't learn these skills and then everything stays, you know, in line for the rest of it. And I think that's really an important lesson, because you have to be able to forgive yourself when things fall out of line, and also have faith that you'll be able to get it back again. You know, it's not the end of the world if you have a bad day or a bad week, sometimes a bad month. So,
like you said, there are those good days where you think, oh, I'm flying high and I've got this under control. And then sometimes I think the very next day something will happen just to keep you humble. And
that is very true.
And remind you that life happens.
That is so true.
Julie, I'm wondering, and I'm intrigued by the time management course that you took, and you talked about how time management is not the same as prioritization, which I think so many of us think that if we can just prioritize our tasks and know what we're going to do next or what we're going to do tomorrow or this week or this month, then we really have it under control. And you're explaining that that's just probably a small piece of it, that there's much more. I'm wondering if, off the top of your head, there are other things that you learned, be it in that course or just over the course of your implementing of what you learned in that teaching, that course on time management, that you think might help other women attorneys?
You know, one of the things, you started to ask me that question, I thought, boy, I do not have an answer for that. I don't have any idea. But there is one of the things that they taught us, and I've internalized it, so I didn't think of it. It didn't come to mind right away when you asked this. But one of the things that I learned in this first course, which was just a groundbreaking event for me personally to have attended, was the importance of delegation. And we all know that it's important, but we don't necessarily know how to do it correctly. And as attorneys, you know, we all have a tendency, I think, to have the feeling that, you know, it's our client, it's our work, we're the ones who need to do it all. But when you're looking at what you need to do for the week, one of the things that the first course taught me was to examine every task that needs to be done and ask myself, do I really have to do that? Is there somebody else who could do it under my direction? And if so, get it off my desk, and to have a system for delegating so that you don't lose it. That's the most important thing. You know, the woman who taught this course, her theory was it's not the problem, you know, that everybody has to delegate, although it's hard to let go of your work. The problem is you're afraid it won't come back to you. Well, you can take control of that. You look and you figure out what needs to be delegated. And I actually keep a journal. I have a notebook, a time management notebook that I carry with me at all times, and it has a number of things in it. It's got my short list of what has to be done this week. It's got a long list of what needs to be done, you know, over the next 30 days or so. But I've also got things like a place to put notes of, you know, if I need to say something to somebody, I write it down so I don't forget it. There's a list of, I call them save-ups. I think that's what this woman called them as well. Mm-hmm. But then there's a diary page for delegation. And when I have a task that I assign to somebody else, there's a venue there. I put in the date I assigned it, to whom I sent it, what the task was, when it's due, and I review that diary page several times a week to make sure nobody's forgotten to give anything back to me, so that you create your own safety net. But at the same time, you free time up for yourself to attend to other matters. So that's not something that you think about when you think time management, but it really is, and it's really helpful, and it's a skill that people have to work to develop, I think.
I completely agree, and I think delegation, sometimes, like you said, we forget about that as an opportunity to almost create more time in our day. You know, we wish for those more hours. Well, sometimes if you can take things off your plate that would otherwise take you a half hour or an hour or something, you literally do create more time in your day. And it can be personal or professional. I'm just thinking, my daughter's birthday party is this weekend. My mother-in-law keeps saying, what can I bring, Kendra? What can I bring? And I keep saying, oh, nothing, nothing. But there's those opportunities. Well, maybe I could say, hey, would you save me a trip to the grocery store and pick up a couple of bags of chips? She wants to help, and I need the help. And I think there's those opportunities that we even gloss over that are kind of delegating in their own way, but it's in our personal life as well as our professional life.
You know, I agree with you, and I think as women in law, you know, we're all bred kind of, you don't ask
That's
people
right. Yep.
For stuff. You don't want to impose on anybody, and you know, delegation is asking, except that you're sitting in a position of authority for, you know, delegating to somebody who wants to help you, and you're absolutely right about the personal application of that, and it's especially hard to delegate in our personal lives, but, you know, there's also another benefit in your professional life. Most of us, at least around here, are judged by our firms based not only on how much work we produce on our own, but how much work we produce for other people to do. And so there's a monetary reward if you can more effectively delegate if you're an attorney, because the more stuff that's billable that you scoot off of your desk to an associate, then you're, the more production you have when you're being evaluated at the end of the year. So it, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be able to delegate if you can learn that skill.
That's true, and that's a completely separate motivation other than your own peace of mind and sanity and efficiency, but sometimes the firm even wants you to be doing that and creating work for others and allowing yourself more time to be doing the billable activities and those sorts of things. So you do have a financial motivation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe there's some overlap then between a bit of the self-assessment and this idea of delegation, you know, figuring out what your strengths are, what can you delegate, even things, like you said, professionally, we can find all sorts of things to delegate to some of the support staff that we work with or find support staff, or personally we can find things too. Like you said, sometimes there's more of a challenge, I think, personally, because we feel like, oh, as a mom or as a wife, we should be doing all of these things. But I think even sometimes a housekeeper is a beautiful form of delegation when we just can't keep up on our house. Sometimes we can do that. And it is. But you said it comes from that position of control, not in a control freak sort of way, but for those of us who are a little bit driven by that, that we do like to have our hand on everything and know where everything is and that it's getting done, we can pick who we delegate to. And so we sit in that position of figuring that out and knowing that we delegate to the right person. But I think it also means making sure we have that trustworthy person to delegate to, be it professionally or personally, that we're careful about who we delegate to. Because, as you said, there's nothing worse than delegating something and then not getting it back, or getting it back in a less than quality way, be that in our lives or in our work. So I think it's having that right person in the right spot to be delegated to is also critical.
You know, I like that. I had never really thought of the issue of trustworthiness within the work environment or the home environment in terms of delegating. But you're absolutely right. I think people who don't delegate don't trust. You know, it's easy to not trust that everything will come back. And, you know, I hadn't really thought of it in this perspective, but, you know, part of my work-life balance is the fact that I'm in a very supportive law firm that is very focused on families. So it encourages people to do the kind of things that they need to do to be able to be good parents and citizens, as well as being good lawyers. We're not solely focused on the bottom line, and we want our lawyers to be skilled, but we don't want them to be unhappy lawyers, because unhappy lawyers are not good lawyers. So that's the same thing. But I also want to tell you, I just wrote down that hiring a housekeeper is a beautiful form of delegation. I'm going to post that on my wall in my office.
Good. I think it's sometimes that last bastion of delegation for us, but just the sanity it can bring. And it really is delegate. Like, oh, well, I need to vacuum my floors. Wait, that's something I could delegate to someone.
So it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it can be a beautiful thing. That's what I tell my husband, too. Oh, Julie, before we wrap up, I'm wondering if there's anything else. You said sometimes that cocktail parties or other events, you connect with women attorneys. And I'm wondering if there's anything else that you would say to someone standing in front of you, like another woman attorney who's out there trying to figure out how to balance the work and the life and everything that's being thrown at her. Anything else you'd like to share with her, or sort of through her, the women who will be listening to or reading these words?
I think it's important to remember that you're not alone. And don't be afraid to speak up and seek out the help of others. In my case, I sought the help of a professional. I live in a large metropolitan area where coaching is common. But if there are other women lawyers nearby who are of your same age and maybe in some of the similar circumstances, you can really support each other very, very well, even if you don't have or want access to a professional for assistance. It can be a very lonely thing to be running a life that's both professional and personal. So having that support of other people, I think, is really the most important thing. And you know, one thing I didn't say before is that I actually continue to have contact with my coach. I, you know, we finished our work together 9 years ago, but I now belong to a virtual coaching group so that I can tweak my professionalism and my work-life balance on a continuing basis. And it's a group with, instead of working one-on-one with her, she runs it for a number of women lawyers, and we get to talk every couple of weeks. And I find that deeply gratifying, and it helps keep me grounded during those bad weeks, too. So reach out. I think that's the best advice I can give.
There is that feeling of a bit of a sisterhood among us who, when we can separate ourselves from the adversarial nature of what we do and we look at other women lawyers, and it's not 100%. There are certain women, of course, women lawyers who don't want to engage and support in that way, but I think for the most part, when we encounter other women who are professionally doing similar work to us and who are personally navigating some of the same tricky waters that we are navigating, there is a magnetism between us and a desire to support one another, both in giving advice or support that we can give and also receiving, that opening ourselves up, like you said, just asking the question, seeing someone who's doing something, you know, maybe they have kids your same age and they're somehow doing something that you can't figure out how to get done on your own, just asking the question, hey, how are you doing that, and allowing yourself to receive the answer. Like you said, we struggle sometimes to ask the question, but that's the only way to get the answer sometimes.
Exactly.
And also, as you mentioned, a coach, that kind of support is critical sometimes. And again, I think we resist asking for that sort of professional support, and yet just having someone to keep us on track and give suggestions and help us live up to those goals that we set for ourselves in our self-assessment can be key to creating that kind of balance that we seek.
I agree.
Julie, I'm just so delighted to have connected with you, and I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind sharing any information about yourself or your law firm, ways that folks could connect with you in the future should they choose to. What would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, you know, our law firm has a presence online, and that website is www.csadlawyers.com. We have a second site because we have a second office, which is csadlawfirm.com. But also, I tweet. I'm on Twitter at Twitter/VADivorceATTY. And everybody can see my divorce advice there. It's kind of common sense stuff that they can look at. And I'm always available by email at jday@csadlawyers.com. I'm always happy to talk to anybody or speak to anybody or any group about these issues, because I think it's so important for women to be productive in law firms and be happy at it.
That's great. And thank you for mentioning also the social media aspect of being on Twitter. It's a fun way to connect with people in quick little bursts, but just feel like, you know, we're out there and connected, and there's lots of neat people to connect with in that way, too. And it's a little more informal. So thanks for mentioning the social media opportunity, as well as your email, and just being so willing to share and connect with other women. So thank you for sharing that, Julie.
Sure, no problem.
Well, with that, Julie, I think we'll wrap up our conversation. I want to thank you one last time on the call here for being here, for sharing of your experience and making yourself a little vulnerable and talking about where you struggled and also what you've learned, because it's only through seeing what other women have gone through and how they've overcome it that we can maybe shortcut our path to that same place. So you've served a lot of women by your words and by your presence today, and I thank you so deeply.
Well, thank you, Kendra, for this opportunity. It's really been a great interview, and I appreciate it, having the time to talk to you.
Oh, my pleasure completely. Well, with that, we will wrap up our conversation with Julie. Again, I thank her, and I also thank you, any of the people who are here listening, or if you are reading these words, however you're encountering this conversation and Julie's words of wisdom, I hope and I trust that you've gleaned something that will be of service to you and be a blessing to you as you try to create the kind of work and the kind of law practice as well as the kind of life that you envision for yourself. So with that, this is Kendra Brodeen, founder and CEO of Women Lawyers Online, wishing you real success always and in all ways. Thank you again for being here. Bye-bye.